Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, in the middle of the summer, we're going to have another great summer read, Warm Transfer, a novel by Laura Holtz. It's a great story, and it's, wow, when I got the book, I'm like, oh, this is so big. How am I going to read this? It's going to take me like forever. And I got it, and I said, you know what? I read that pretty quickly. You know, I'm the type of person who can scan. I'll tell you, I could read 4 or 5 books a day. I have to be in this business, you know. But I sat down and I read through the book and I said, you know, this is really a great story. And it kind of, yeah, it did take me a little bit longer than normal. But however, it was a great story. It was not mill of the run. It was not a story like I've read before. It had more adventure. It had more complications, so to speak. It had more issues, and it had something that took me on a different journey, which was something I really needed because, you know, sometimes in the deep summer, it's just like, oh, I'm so over this. Give me somewhere else to go in my thoughts, and I'm ready and good for it. So today we're going to be talking about Warm Transfer. It's really a story about women, men, how they get along, how they don't get along, how marriages work, how they don't work, how abuse, violence, anger, power, poverty, how all of these play out together. And isn't that all the petals on our daisy anyway? Everybody's got a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Just stick your finger up in the air and say, which way is the wind blowing today? So today, Laura, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're so welcome. So don't you think, Laura, everybody's got one of those petals on their flowers? It's just how your adventure plays out, right?
You know, that is absolutely true, and I've talked to so many, mostly female readers, women who have read my book, and they see themselves in some of these characters. You know, life is complicated, and the more time that passes, the less we are surprised by things that we hear about friends or neighbors or family members. You know, life is just a big, like you say, it's a daisy with lots of petals, and that's what makes it interesting, and that's what makes it complicated sometimes.
You know, it's funny, you just said something that was so interesting. You said it's mostly female. Well, of course, because female want to read it and say that reflects something in me. When men would turn around and say, holy crap, I don't belong to that legion of fools, you know?
Well, I hope that they don't.
Right. But you know, I think a lot of times people are saying, but hey, I'll read it. But that's kind of the secret I've been holding on to. And then they don't share about it. You know, many times we say to people, it's great to read a story and you could feel that sense, but then it turns into, is that my shame or guilt cabinet that I've been kind of keeping under lock and key, and I don't want to branch out. I think right now, the reason women are able to read stories like yours, again, the book is Warm Transfer, is about saying, you know what, I had a sense of that. Oh, you mean it's written down in words? Someone else is talking about it. Maybe it's okay if I start sharing my story. And isn't that the wonder of really what these books are all about?
Indeed. Yeah, indeed. And I think I'm very grateful that we live sort of in the realm of this Me Too movement. It really opens things up for women. I mean, it really shined a light on intimate partner abuse. And I don't simply mean physical violence. We're talking in the book very much about emotional abuse, verbal abuse, things that are very insidious and they are confusing to the victims. And in fact, and I don't know if you picked this up in my story, but I was very deliberate in how the therapist in my story calls out the abuse, because I think, you know, from my own experience in my late 20s, I was in a very brief relationship with someone who was emotionally abusive. It's confusing, and you don't necessarily, right. you don't put a label on it as abuse when it happens to you.
Mm-hmm.
You just think, why is this person treating me this way? And if it persists, sometimes people exit the relationship, and sometimes it gains momentum and people stay in it, and the longer they're in it, it's harder to extract themselves from it and emancipate themselves. But I feel like the Me Too movement, back to that, has really, you know, enabled a lot of people to step up and say, you know, this happened to me, or some degree
right.
of it happened to me. And that's really liberating.
Well, you know, I think in the 90s, we really got suckered into those movie lines. They used to say, you know, we're each part, but now we are as one. And it's sort of like, whoa, that gave a whole heck of a lot of power to men, because they pretty much had the upper hand. Do you know what I'm saying? And then you
yeah.
turned around, and when that kind of like started going and falling apart, and we're saying now with the Me Too, we're saying, hey, I am me. I stand right. alone. I am me and my identity. And yet, you know, so some people may be still stuck into those other older paradigms, and we all know it, and they say, oh, but for their love, or for this or for that. I'll never forget one time I had a reading by a psychic, and when I lived in Arizona, and the person said, oh, but you love them. Right. So isn't that why you stay? And it was like it really seriously threw me. And I kind of stayed, you know, for a while and stuff. And then I turned back and I said, but you know what? Does love in any of its forms, conditional or unconditional, have to strap us into a box, confining us, saying that everything outside of this has to revolve around? And because I took that oath of love, I'm kind of screwed,
mm-hmm.
don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You know, there are a lot of reasons that people don't leave situations. They may have low self-esteem. They may be embarrassed or feel a lot of shame. Sometimes they even believe that the emotional verbal abuse or physical violence is mm-hmm. normal. So, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and yeah, I think it takes some close introspection and
mm-hmm.
and asking yourself the question, you know, is this really love when someone is intimidating me and threatening me? And of course, the answer is no.
To the idea that love is unconditional love is self-love.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can look at it more at that. And then saying, I may interact and engage with another person to engage, I love in, you know, I have unconditional love for you, doesn't mean that if I act a certain way, I'm going to get something in response. I think we're so misconstrued these days in what the idea of love actually is. Everybody thinks it's a give and a take. No, it's kind of like I love myself and I'm interacting with you in a loving manner, you know, and it's two totally different things, because people will say, oh, but I have self-love for myself. I'm king of the hill. I know exactly what I'm doing. Well, no, that's maybe a narcissistic kind of power. That's not really unconditional love. And what you're spewing out is your tentacles kind of idea, you know?
Mm.
So I think we sometimes have so many stories and so many definitions and so many different ways that we see love playing out in the world, we aren't really even sure what it is anymore, don't you think?
I agree. And I think, you know, the perfect scenario in terms of relationships is when you have two people that love themselves and
right.
and care for themselves and have empathy and compassion and,
right.
you know, support one another. But that really does, like you said, it starts with each individual really having that shored up confidence and love for themselves and appreciation for themselves. People who are abusive really don't like themselves much,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I'm not by any means an expert, but I have done a lot of reading, and I spoke to therapists while I was, you know, preparing to write the book. So, you know, that's pretty universal. You hear that that the abusers are very insecure. That's why they do what they do.
Well, I'll be another one of the Me Too. In other words, I really call it raise my hand. You know, it's the idea that abuse I've had every single kind in this lifetime. You give me a list, I'll go down and check every single one of them off. But the idea is you get it into it, you expand within it, you learn different things about yourself, about others, and then you move through it. Really, that's what this lifetime is about. If we're even looking at a lot of the spirituality movements now, expanded consciousness, a whole lot of more awakening, going to just knowing more of ourselves as a spiritual being, that's really where we're going, is going through this lifetime and experiencing all these different things that were all part of ourselves at one time or another, and how can we, quote, move through them rather than just holding on to them as a gift bag or holding on to their stories and their identity and believe it is our legacy. We can turn it around and say, I moved through it. Phew, kind of cool, you know. It's almost like you can wear a jacket with all of those names on your back, but it isn't where you're going. It's where you've been. Mm-hmm. And I think it's about really being able to do that. You know, it's funny we talk about this today because starting in September, I'll be doing some more hypnosis sessions where we're doing a lot of past life regression. We're doing a lot of hypnosis, a lot of releasing this. I think a lot of times people say, why does this keep coming up in my life? Or why did this show up? I didn't buy this book. I didn't come here for that. And it's really that we came into this world to experience certain things so we'd learn more about ourselves. It's not about the other person all the time. We're learning about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And isn't that really where the aspect of power is? We're learning about us, each other.
Yes, I completely agree. And I also agree that making it through an experience like this, whichever box you've checked, because, you know, you are not alone. I am not alone. There are so many women who can check all the boxes, whether it's workplace harassment or whatever. Congratulations that you made it through that. And you've been able to stand now back at arm's length, look at the experience, and really learn about yourself and learn how you, and when I say the word participated in that, but how you behaved in that situation, and just the awareness of that, I think, is really, really super empowering.
Well, I think, don't you think sometimes too, though, and I really want to let women off the hook in this, because it really, if you haven't been in there, it's really looking at it from a different perspective. We say how women engage and how they, in other words, how they participated in it. Well, really when you're in it, you can't know it unless you find out what color it is, what it smells like, what it tastes like, what it looks like. What happens when you drop it on the ground? What happens when you set it free? What happens when you wash and rinse and repeat? You know, you really need to know all the aspects and all the core of it to get through it. Otherwise, it's going to be like this big label on the door that says, you forgot something. You got to go back again. And so you can let it go. And I think that's when now we see a lot of it on TV with the, like you talk about the Me Too movement, is a lot of them have already been through it so that they know that. And now it's okay. Now, finally, all of those little lock and keys have been inserted, and now you can walk through, and the door is closed forever behind you.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.
It's interesting. I had coffee with a woman last week who has a website. She's a survivor of domestic abuse. And she now has started a website where women can write their stories. They can do it anonymously. Mm-hmm. And this young lady who was in her mid-20s, she offers editing for them if they want that sort of support. But she said it's just so amazingly cathartic for all of these women to come forward and just to put pen to paper and send their story out into the universe.
Right.
Through this, We Are Her is the name of the website. And it's just, and I talked to her a little bit about, because, you know, I'm in middle age and have children, and she's kind of young and starting out. And I said, I wonder, looking at your generation versus mine versus my mother's, what sort of lens we look through our experiences, like how are they different? I said, because I feel that you are so emboldened by this movement and so open. And she nodded her head and said, I couldn't agree more. And we sort of laughed,
right,
because, you know, the millennial generation has this label of entitlement, right? But with that, maybe has come this entitlement to, you know what, we deserve to,
right,
be respected, and we,
mm-hmm,
expect, you know, to be treated with respect. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, wonderful byproduct if that is truly the case.
Right. And I'm in my 60s, and I look at it, I've spoken about it before on the radio show, is that a lot of the women who are now in their 70s and 80s, I work with a lot of end-of-life clients, and what we've found is that they pretty much stayed because they had to, or they didn't know any better, or they were in a certain existence or a certain paradigm that they believe this was their path. They kind of bought that book when they came into this world, and they're just playing out their pages. Then along come the 60s or so, and the 60-year-olds and the 50-year-olds, and they're saying, oh, man, you know, I bought the book too. You know, 50s and when we lived in the 50s and 60s, you know, it was you get a job, you have a house, you know, you do this, you do that. But really now they kind of caught the tail end of it, and they said, but I want different. And then we look back at the 30s and 40s, and they're saying, oh, I'm not going to repeat that. And along come the millennials, and they'll say, I didn't buy that book. I don't know what that book means. It must be written in a different damn language. Because you know what?
I'm digital anyway. I don't even read the hard copy.
Right. So it's, I mean, we can see it, how it plays out over history, but which that is great. Because that really shows evolution of the humans as we're going along. So if you're kind of stuck in one of those time frames or those age requirements, so to speak, say, okay, this might be going on for me, but I do have an option. I can change it, shift it, or do whatever, you know. And many times we can also say, okay, but that's all right. I'm going to accept where I am. And when I come back in the next lifetime, all will be good. I'll deal with it. I'll expand it. I'll change it. Because we've always said a lot on the show about our soul and our spirit is really a continuum. Each lifetime is just a wardrobe change. So many people get so wrapped up, but I didn't leave them. I didn't fix it. I didn't do this. I didn't repair everything. I didn't heal everything. It's okay. If you need to go through this life and end this life in a certain juxtaposition, so to speak, it's okay. There will be another lifetime you'll be able to do that. And I think that frees souls and spirits so much more versus people saying, wagging the finger, what's wrong with you? Why can't you get it? Why didn't you do it? You know, we see that along generations. Why is my mother still doing that? Why is my grandmother still doing that? Why do the millennials, you know, and they look back, why are the millennials doing that? They're not allowed to do that. So a lot of this bickering, a lot of finger wagging, if we could just accept where we are in that position, and be able to say, now I can choose, and what would that be, right?
Right, right. It's about being compassionate with yourself and your soul, I suppose, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it applies to looking forward and looking backwards and looking at where you are, you know, in any given moment, for sure.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a tough place to be. So many times people will say, why are they doing that? Or someone's doing it to me. To be able to turn around and say, it's going on around me. Do I want to play in that sandbox or not? Let's talk about your book again, Warm Transfer. A lot of times things play out around your character, and it's, do I want to step into that mode, or do I want to separate myself from that mode and see what I could find to be able to support my own heart and soul, right?
Right, right. And, you know, I'm not sure that your listeners know the term warm transfer. And if you don't mind, I'll just explain what that is, because it's sort of an atypical title. Many of us have had warm transfers, and we really didn't know that there was a name for them. But a warm transfer is when you're on the telephone with a customer service agent, and they transfer your call, but instead of just sending you off into the ether, they stay on the line with you and make sure that you get where you need to go. And I think that is such a beautiful metaphor for the people who help us get from point A to point B, who hold our hand and ensure safe passage through a really rough time, whether it's a family member, a parent. It doesn't necessarily have to be a romantic relationship, but it can be a friend. And, you know, like you said, my protagonist is lucky in that she is able to form a relationship with someone, and it's a trusting relationship, who takes her hand as she comes through and evolves through the book and is able to reinvent herself and reshape her future.
Yeah, and I think that really sometimes people will say, I don't have anyone else. I don't know how to be able to do that. They're searching for that person to be able to be that reach out hand. I know a lot of times in my own life there was no one there to do that. And I kind of would speak to, you know, how I pretty much have been an angel reader my life and spiritual person. So I had a lot of those connections instead. But I think a lot of times people will say, what can I do, or how can I do it to be able to reach out and find that space? In other words, you're not looking to connect with someone else. You're looking to be able to be connected to yourself. And that's a huge different thing. Sometimes people say, well, I want to go on, I want to tell my story, and then they want to dump it on you. And then, you know, they don't want to take responsibility for where they are or to be able to reflect to where they are. Sometimes when you can reach out and have that warm transfer, it's really what you're doing is you're saying, that's giving me the space to be validated, to be able to release who I am, so that I can then hear with my ears, sense with my gut, be able to know with my heart exactly where or who or how I'm playing and dancing in this all together. You know, I think we get so stuck in it, we want to dump because it's easier. But when we can do that other, it's such a more profound life experience that we're really looking for. We just don't know what it looks like, right?
Yes, I agree. And I think profound and much more of a rich experience. And I love the word validation. It's one that was in my head as I drafted Warm Transfer, because in the book, I mean, hopefully the book itself can be a warm transfer for someone.
Right.
And when I wrote, especially the scenes with Faria, the therapist, I wanted to at least be able to validate someone who perhaps needed a warm transfer. And, and you know, like you said in your past, there was no one there. My hope was to just validate someone's experience, to just say yes to it.
Well, you know, the whole concept is we don't exist unless we're validated. In other words, if someone does not see us, then we aren't perceived as being whole. We're not perceived as existing. You know, we think back on quantum physics all the time. I've spoken on the show about it. Is that unless I see that plant, it doesn't exist to me. So in other words, it doesn't. That perception and that validation is very important in this world. You know, we see a lot of people walking around and they're saying, I don't feel like I exist in the world. It's because they haven't been validated, or they haven't, their perceptions with someone else are kind of two timelines that are maybe going in opposite directions, versus even when you're in, even in a parallel existence, it really doesn't even relate because you're kind of like going at different speeds. It's truly only when you engage with someone, when you are present with them, is it really when your timelines cross over and you're able to see someone, validate them, hear them, know their pain, feel and sense what they're talking about, right?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I have a friend who is going through a messy divorce right now, and we were just talking about this because she called me, and she started telling me something, and I immediately, my knee-jerk was to help her, give her advice, right? And I started to talk, and she said, stop. I just need you to hear me.
To hear.
She just wanted me to listen. And I thought, oh, shame on me. Like, I know this.
Yeah.
Stop and be quiet and let her do the talking.
Right. So. I think we're looking for that so much. In fact, it's so funny because on my website, my sessions are called Let's Talk. I don't know. Just call me up. Just tell me what your beef is and we figure it out. But I think it's so important how many people will turn around and say, I'm coming to you. Like when they come to go to the doctor, they'll say, they'll come to me and they'll say, oh, well, this is and this is wrong. And then they leave and they're like, well, they didn't fix me. Well, of course no one fixed you, because what you did was you gave a splurb about something that you thought was wrong with you and you thought was it. And you know, there's no connection. In other words, that's a perfect example of parallel timelines. There is no connection, you know. And I think sometimes when we look at it and we talk about what is really going on inside, and especially your characters in the book, again, Warm Transfer, is really about what is going on inside and are you ever connected to it, you know?
Right.
Only when your character stepped back could she see the things that the husband was doing, maybe the anger or maybe this or maybe that, and see that his anger still exists outside of herself even when she's displaced from him. I think that's so vitally important for women to understand, is they say, oh, he has so much anger for me. Stop. Displace yourself and see if his anger still coexists within him somewhere else. And most 99.9% of it will be true, you know. In other words, what they're playing out is not a factor of, you know, you're calling it to you. It's just existing out there. So step out of that realm, right?
Yes. I appreciate that you say that. I think it's great advice. And in fact, there's a line in the book where the therapist, you know, Tamsin, the protagonist, is having trouble really getting a grip on the term abuse, that her husband is an abuser.
Right.
And the therapist, you know, is trying to validate her. And Tamsin says, you know, I just want him to know that I'm on his team. And the therapist says that you are on his side. And Tamsin says, yes, I just don't know why he hates me so much. And the therapist says, he doesn't hate you. He hates women. Which is a really big statement. And in fact, I debated with a trauma therapist as to whether to include that line. And I ended up leaving it in because, you know, perhaps it wouldn't be true for every abuser that they hate all women. But they certainly hate themselves, I think. And I just felt like it was important to be heavy-handed in that discussion. And to your point, that anger, that vitriol lives in its own realm with this person. It is not something that, you know, the victim is calling forth to themselves, or, you know, it has really nothing to do with them. They're just in the situation and they're there, and they become the punching bag, figuratively or literally.
And if you look at it, if I'm here present trying to experience how it feels to be hurt, that experience will show up. There will always be a game player to the game that I'm wishing to choose. That's a pretty tough thing to hear. If you're choosing something, you're going to have a player. So why are you blaming the player when it's the experience that you're choosing to be able to go around in? Do you see what I'm saying? It's kind of a super tough thing to get. And I only can say it when I'm outside of it, because I've gone through it. You cannot, under any circumstances, say that same thing when you're in it. So if anyone's going through it, it's like, no, I want you to say, hey, you know, I'm in this game. Let me experience it for all it's got. Because when I'm ready and all of the little dice are lined up around it and I'm done and that gear opens the door, I'm done. But the thing is, when you look back, you say, I get the part that they played. And sometimes you say, wow, that was important because that showed me this. That showed me that, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a very, very hard place to be to see all of this, how it all plays out, you know, because it's an experience that you cannot get over. And also, too, the idea of for what reason an abuser may or may not be there. And really, there are just as many stars as there are in the sky. It's just as many reasons why someone does or doesn't do what they do. It's also the reason why you do or don't do what you do, or what the name of your game is for today. I think we've gotten so restrictive with labels these days that we want to say abuse is the number, like the title of the chapter. And I would say scratch the chapters and just keep writing, because what you're writing is your inside, instead of giving it a label and then turning around and hanging your hat on that. And verification and validation that's what I have, and I must have this too, and that's how that should play out, and this is how it's going to be. Instead of saying, you know what, create your own game on what's going on inside of you and figure out how to get that door open. That is a huge way. And once you get the door open, if you've got 4 or 5 abuses in your life, you'll start spinning through them like rocks. You'll go, oh, cool, I recognize you. I've seen you before. We're out of this. You know, and it really takes a while to be able to get to that, because existence will test you. The universe will test you. Are you done with this? Are you sure? You know, and when it does, you say, yeah, I'm done with that. Cool. I'm good. Next day you get up and it doesn't even recognize it anymore. Mm-hmm. So there is ways to be able to get through it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that's indeed the case. And, you know, one of the things that I talk about in the book is the tolerable limit, right? I mean, you talk about like when someone wakes up one morning. And I think that in some cases it's almost, you know, that profound where you can simmer at a certain point right below a line, and then something will cause you to boil over it. And once you're past that line, it's over. You see the relationship in a different light. You make a decision to move on. But I do believe based on my own experience, you know, when I was much younger, and also based on women I've spoken to, that everybody has a tolerable limit, and that threshold is different for everyone. But once that line is crossed, the relationship is over. And you back out, hopefully gracefully, and learn and evolve.
I almost look at it as a witch holding your soul over a pot of stew, okay? And your soul says, how much are you going to take? You know, we get closer and we get closer, we get closer. And finally your soul says, I've got the power. I'm going to be bigger. I'm out of here. And all of a sudden, it kind of like your soul rises and blows out of the situation. So sometimes people will say, you know, like just like you said, you hope it's not messy. But sometimes it's so messy that, hey, when you blow out of that situation, the stew goes everywhere. The witch disappears. She gets angry. So, I mean, like kind of like think of your own metaphor to think of however you have to do it to say, my soul has the power, and bam, it shows up. I think sometimes we lose our imagination, we lose our metaphors, we lose our perception that something could be so mystical and so magical in the world, and we say, but it has to show up like Jane down the corner. I'm going to have to follow her. Let me go find out what she did so I could do it too. Well, hey, this thing's going to show up in your life again until you figure out, your own essence. Think of over the pot. How can you just, you know, blow everything out and bring that up? That's a different way of looking at it. And I think sometimes we forget that because we get so stuck, yes?
Yes, I agree. And I will also say that every woman's experience is vastly different. And,
yes,
you know, I have had women, yeah, say to me, how did you go about this? And what did you, and it's very, very difficult to give advice to someone,
mm-hmm,
because their experience, the players, the scenario, what they need, it's just different for everyone. So there,
right,
is no one size fits all response. That's for sure.
You know, we've talked about this before, abuse on my show, and I would say to someone, you know, let's say you have one person on one side of the river and one on another side, and there's a bridge in between. And to be able to get help, one of you is you're both going to start, you know, walking towards the middle. So really what happens is as they both get to the middle, one's kind of like short-sighted, and you kind of have to go over to their side because they aren't quite able to make it. And then here's some real magic is, what do you do when you get there? Everybody says, I put my hand down to pull them up. I'll say, no, perhaps maybe lay down with them and say, hey, what does it look like from here? Let's look up. Mm. Tell me your story. And yeah, isn't that the biggest difference? Because that hand up says that I've got the answers and I'm the power kind of idea. And then you're kind of right back into that abuser situation. Someone's, mm-hmm, going to fix you, hold you, abuse you, take care of you, whatever that might be. That's always been the abuser paradigm. They have the answers. I don't. Mm-hmm. So if you can, right, turn around and have someone that helps you, that they lay down next to you and say, wow, tell me what you're looking at. What's up there? And isn't that a great difference? You know, I, mm-hmm, think that really is breaking the wall.
For sure. Yeah, I like that.
You know, it's a tough place to be. Let's talk for a little bit about power. Power, I think, power and protection. When we talk about children in situations. Well, you know, I'm part of many groups that talk about adult children who lived through abuse or alcoholic children, you know, who are now adults and they can't figure their stuff out and all of this. I think everything in our life is an imprint. If you turn around, you stub your toe because you were running on ice, you're going to remember, ice is not good. That's an imprint, okay?
Yes.
You can remember, hey, I went to school and I forgot my book bag and I got an F. Well, you remember. That's an imprint. Parents were, mm-hmm, fighting. That's an imprint. My mother went out the door and she never came back. That's an imprint. Or how about the smell of alcohol? Or, ooh, I really love this certain drink, you know, when you drink it till the day you die because, mm-hmm, it connects to your dead father, whatever it is. So if we think, mm-hmm, of life as imprints all the time, we say, what are we creating with our children? What is the game we're playing? What are the imprints we're putting out there? Because really, they're in the game too. They're not separate. You know, people want to say, they're my kids, I'm protecting them. And I say a big fat BS. You know what I mean? They're, mm-hmm, in the game. There is no, yeah, separation of the game. This is the game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And, you know, the protagonist in the book and her husband have two young children, a teenager and a young boy. And the protagonist, Tamsin, is really, really protective of the kids. And is trying to insulate them from the, mm-hmm, the damage. She doesn't want that. You know, the kids are collateral damage, and she's trying.
Right.
She does tries very hard to protect them from seeing, hearing any of the arguments or her husband belittling her, and. And, you know, they, as in real life, kids, these kids will be shaped by the stresses,
right,
and the actions of the parents' marital dynamic. It's just how it is.
You know, I've got a really good book for you, Laura, to do next. It's called Ashes on the Floor. And it's,
okay,
when all of this that she's held back for all of this time, mm-hmm, when it all falls apart, what happens?
Yeah.
You know, the kids get older, yeah, you know, the husband isn't there all the time, empty nest, business goes astray. We all know those because people will say, when I try to make a change in my life, everything falls away and it's like ashes on the floor. And when you have ashes on the floor, it's really, what do you do? Do you try to take those ashes and then recreate your life? Or do you open the door, sweep them out and say, okay, what's next? So a lot of times people will say, those things happened to me in the past. It happened to my family. It's happening now. I'm doing this with my children. And they kind of want to have that shame and guilt quotient up really high because they feel like it empowers them. Well, what would happen when it all falls apart, right?
Indeed. Yeah. It's sometimes catastrophic, no doubt. And I like the image of the ashes because ashes are so delicate and you could open the door to sweep them out and the wind kicks up and suddenly they're all over the furniture and everything else. You know, it's hard to contain them sometimes.
You know, it's the funniest thing, though, because when I was speaking with the quantum physicist guy, we were talking about DNA and particles and all this other stuff, and they're like, oh, everybody's so protective of their DNA. They're so, you know, I don't want anyone to know my medical records. I don't want anyone to know my life history. I don't want anyone to know what goes on inside my house. Oh, I write a story or I found something important and I now have intellectual, you know, property. I have to protect it. I says, you know, did you ever go outside and you brush your hair and a piece of your hair just flies off in the wind? You've just given your DNA to the universe. I mean, what the heck are you so freaking protective about? You know what I mean? It's right, sort of like, you know, and I even have that one of my picture books. I says, go outside and just brush your essence out into the universe because truly is that, you know? And so I think sometimes we get so stuck with the story, you know, give it wings, let it go. So when things fall on the floor or your marriage breaks apart or your abuser leaves or whatever, open the door, sage your place down like nobody's business, push it all outside and say, what would I like now, you know, instead of carrying around the tokens or the imprints. I think the tokens and the imprints we believe is us, but we're not our identity. We're a true soul and a spirit. We are not the identity that we've created. We are not the rich lady on the corner. We are not the lady that has the big job. We're not the one that's got her kids all dressed up. That is not us. That is our identity that's out there. It's an illusion. Who we are is inside. And I think when people really have a lot of these confounding stories like in your book is when all of that tends to go away, when it really comes down to it, who are you really? It's like you're nothing of that. That's really kind of a cool place to be.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, you talked about guilt. And certainly my character carries it around. I mean, it is like a giant gold medallion in her pocket.
Right.
And, you know, I don't want to spoiler alert it, but I you know, she hasn't cast it off at the end of the story.
Right,
and I think a lot of women especially carry quite a bit of guilt.
But they do it because they want to have a weapon. In other words, they feel validated upon, so they have to store up all of these validation tokens so that when someone comes at them, they got a weapon to be able to go against them, you know? And I think that's kind of a dangerous place to be because it's almost like the eye for eye kind of idea, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that. And I like the idea of, I don't know, I just love the idea of casting it off and stripping that all away. As you know, the book takes place in very high society, so that resonated when you said, you know, it's not the rich lady on the corner. She certainly is struggling with that. And it's hard for people to separate because, you know, your identity is what you've used to validate yourself, right?
Right.
And to part with it is like saying goodbye to a really old friend, you know, been by your side forever.
Yeah, and that's a really hard place to be. And I think that that's what keeps people in a game. They can change the name. They can alter it. They could say, oh, I'm not being emotionally abused anymore. Now you're just being financially abused. Now you're just being locked down in your house. Now you are having someone follow you all the time. Now you are having a PI person watching your every move, you know? So in other words, let's just change the name of the chapter, but it's still the same book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tough place to be these days, I'll tell you. You know, so Laura, I think, you know, your book, again, Warm Transfer, is really great for women that are saying, how can I recognize different things in my life? And, ooh, that sounds like me. Oh, that sounds like someone I know. Or you could say, I've seen that play out before, right?
Exactly. And that was my hope in writing it, was to help. And, you know, abuse is a very sensitive topic. And I've been, you know, like I said, I've encountered all sorts of harassment, and I've had the whole Bobo platter of, you know, sort of gender power control experiences in my lifetime, like you have. And I've, you know, left them behind, you know, and I'm grateful that I'm in a very, I'm in a terrific place, and I'm very, I'm at peace, I'm content. But I wanted to be reverent to the fact that this is a heavy topic, and it's a very sensitive topic for many people, especially those who are in it. And so I tried to, you know, I'm donating 10% of the profits from the book to RAIN, which is an anti-sexual abuse organization, the largest in the nation, actually. And I just felt compelled to do it as a, almost like a nod. I would have almost felt opportunistic writing about something like this. And incidentally, I had finished my first draft, and then the Me Too movement took hold, and it was, you know, this rising crest, and it was amazing. And it was validating for me, as I was already writing about the topic. But at the same time, it's just, it's something that I hold sort of, you know, I hate to say it's precious, but it is sensitive. And I feel like it's very important to be reverent when you're talking about this topic, out of respect for the people who are in it and either trying to get out of it or trying to identify it or know someone or have a family member who's gone through it.
I think what the most important thing that your book does is it brings up a gut emotion. And whatever that gut emotion is, you'll be able to identify it later yourself. However, it takes you along a journey that says, is it this? Is it this? Is it this? Is it that? So really, if it brings up that gut emotion, read through the whole book and be able to say, you know what? I don't know what it is, but it kind of got something stirred up, and it's about paying attention to that little thing in your gut and saying, I'm not going to ignore it anymore. I'm going to pay attention. And I think that's really where women really stand up and are able to say, tell me your story. Let me hear what you have to say. And what did this do for you? What did it do for me? And be able to share, right?
Yes. Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. That's very true.
Well, Laura, can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That'd be wonderful.
Well, terrific. I have a website, lauraholtz.com, and on the website are links to my Facebook page, and I'm on Instagram. Laura Holtz Author is my handle. One of the delightful things that happens when you write a book is that a publicist says that you got to have a social media presence, which you sort of went into kicking and screaming because I tend to be a little bit more private, but you know, my kids think it's fun, and they like taking my picture, so you know, we go with it. So that's where you'll find everything about the book and a link to purchase the book on Amazon.
Well, very good. It was such a pleasure to have you with us today to share the story. I think a lot of people will find that, like I said, it's a great novel. You just don't know where it may take you. It may take you someplace totally different, and you might just never know it. So it's really about a guided hand, right?
Yes. Thank you so much for having me on your show, Dr. Jeanette. I really, really enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much. If you'd like to find out more information about Laura Holtz and her book, Warm Transfer, a novel, please do check out the link on the bottom of today's show page and go directly to her website. And it really is about having that guided hand, however it shows up. It can be, as it was for me, a lot of my presence of angels or seeing spirits. It may be someone who's turning around and helping you and saying, you know, I want to hear your story. It could be your physician or your doctor, just as I do also. Tell me your story. What is it really? Because it isn't what you came in for. So really, what is that gut-stirring thing inside of you? How do you be able to find someone who is willing to listen? really do check out Laura's book. It's really about what's going to stir inside of you, and it'll be your own individual thing, and be able to say, I think I'll dance with that. Tell me more. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.